You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to another edition of the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson. The date is the 8th of October, 2025. And if you recall, a few weeks ago I mentioned that the army of Bashar al-Assad of Syria has never left the country. No one's talking about this. They certainly are the best trained and best motivated, now especially, group of people. Everyone else is simply foreign mercenaries. The comedy routine of pretending that this guerrilla faction in Damascus that controls a small part of the country is the Syrian government. It's not funny to me, but it's funny in general. But nothing can or has taken the place of the Assad government. So what did the CIA try to do? Essentially, right now, the main guerrilla organization, the HTS. The Hayat Tahrir al-Sham has simply been called the Syrian government, which, of course, in and of itself is absurd. So they don't have control over much of the country. So you're dealing with thousands of highly trained and armed and probably bitter Syrian men throughout the country. And so they came up with hundreds of these status settlement centers. Largely a CIA Mossad operation across various places, even in places where the so-called government doesn't control, that they could process any intelligence or just simply military personnel to bring them, as it says, towards a path towards reconciliation. The process requires them to appear in person at the center, present their military identification, surrender their weapons, and sign a document acknowledging their role on fighting on behalf of the Assad army. The document would also include a pledge never to engage in any similar military activity in the future, which could only mean to not fight for anything connected to Assad or the Ba'ath Party. Now, of course, we're all thinking the same thing. Only a moron would turn themselves over to their enemies like this. They were shooting at each other just a short time ago. Well, of course, the majority refused these offers. Whole regiments, even divisions, sought safety in the forests and mountains of the coastal areas where they regrouped. Now, it's true, the Iraqi government confirmed that about 3,000 Syrian soldiers crossed into Iraq during the last few days of Assad's rule. They were disarmed. They were temporarily lodged there, Anbar province. They won't provide asylum. And they've repatriated almost 2,000 to the CIA by late December. The remnants of Assad's forces then have adopted guerrilla tactics and staged ambushes in the months following the regime's fall, the government's fall. I'm the only one talking about this. The media has refused really to comment on it. Once in a while, And I have my sources. I have a whole bunch of sources, especially Russian military blogs. I have people that I have my sources where I could get behind any kind of major, even alternative media source. But it started in March of 2025, where remnants of Assad's army launched a coup attempt, not so much in Damascus, but in the wealthier coastal areas where the Alawite minority live. And more action and more organization has occurred since then. But back then, Assad's forces took over Latakia and Tartus, inflicting heavy casualties on the various militias paid to fight Assad. It was suppressed with the arrival of reinforcements from HDS, the IDF, and even the U.S. But then they started slaughtering Alawite civilians. That weirdo Islamic group that sort of sometimes believes in reincarnation, that believes in some kind of trinity. They have been targeted. And this is where elements of the Syrian army have fled. There was success there. And it showed the world that there is a continued military and logistical capacity that remains. I was the only person that has dealt with this so far. These forces have been operating under a newly formed military council led by the Special Forces. His name is Giyas Suleiman Dala, head of the Military Council for the Liberation of Syria. And he is joined by Miqdad al-Faitha, and he's the commander of the Coastal Seared Brigade, also Special Forces. Another is Mohammed Jabir, the Russian-backed Desert Hawks militia. There's another, Suhail Hassan, head of Air Force Intelligence in northern Syria. I'm not sure of if he is part of a specific militia or not. And there are several others we'll get to here in a little bit. This includes thousands or tens of thousands of men. The clashes in Syria's coastal regions, coastal meaning with the Mediterranean, back in March, was 4 or 5 days of very intense fighting. No one had really accepted the reconciliation nonsense. And the handful that did were actually those who were fighting in Western Syria. The soldiers and the officers of the former elite 25th Tiger Forces Division of the Syrian Arab Army announced their readiness to continue the fight against the militants, the HTS, who took over at least parts of the country on December 11th. You have protests all over the country, especially in Alawite areas, because they're vulnerable. And on March 6th, the protests began there. There were executions, there were mass arrests. I've been over some of this before. And that's the foundation upon which the Military Council for the Liberation of Syria and the rest were built, as I mentioned. The CIA-backed Damascus guerrillas reversed the situation, at least for the moment. But they simply now have went back into the forest. It's funny, in February of 2025, the Western media claimed, let me quote it, Miqdad Fahia, former commander in the Syrian Republican Guard, announced the formation of the Coastal Seared Brigade, and he claimed responsibility for several ambushes on security forces across the coast. Now, by security forces, they mean the HTS. Now, this was only strictly a military operation. So what does it mean to say they claim responsibility? Only terrorists do that. Showing the not only the deep bias, but the deliberate manipulation of language. These groups have called for the liberation of Syria, at least the Syrian coast, from the terrorist forces that have taken over, with the help of the CIA and the Israelis. In the days that followed, the Coastal Shield Brigade had a substantial, wide-ranging, coordinated attack across the region that overwhelmed the forces backed by the CIA and actually took it. They hold a substantial part of Syria as of right now. Now, guerrillas, you know, they haven't formed a government. They don't know anything about that. All they know how to do is shoot. They have a very unstable security architecture. And all they really know how to do is start killing civilians. And the UN agrees. There is an incipient Baathist insurgency in Syria. You heard it at Radio Albion first. Now, whether it really gains strength in the future, I don't know. Now, here's the propaganda line. Given Johnson's law, it's very simple. Whoever kills the state becomes the state. You can kill Jesse James. That doesn't make you Jesse James. On December 8th of last year, Mohammed Ghazia Jalali, backed by Israel and the USA, announced the quote-unquote Syrian government would somehow hand over power to a new elected government following the departure of Assad from Damascus. And then Ahmed al-Shara, the head of the HTS, announced further that al-Jalai will, quote, supervise state institutions until they are handed over. Now, I want to point out that al-Jalai served actually under Assad for a time. So when he called himself a Baathist, and the minute things went against him, he stayed and pretended that he was with the opposition all along. And he was very quickly removed. I don't know what happened to him. So al-Shara, who the regime calls the leader of Syria, which is hilarious, he delivered a speech at Damascus's Umayyad Mosque, which is, as far as Muslims are concerned, was a very blasphemous thing to do. And he went on to make himself extremely unpopular. This is going to be a new chapter in the history of the region once Assad's gone, he said. And that chapter has to do with their connection with the Iranians. The only thing he condemned after the fall of Damascus was Iran. He fully admits his connection with Israeli aims. And how in heaven's name could he unify anything talking like that? With the Gaza genocide still going on? How popular can the group be when they justify Israeli bombings of their own country, which Mohammed al-Jalai did? You notice that when they refer to al-Shara, they refer to him as the de facto leader. De facto is the phrase used in every single newspaper article without fail. So that's there's a script. Over at least a small part of Syria as the head of the HTS. That has changed their name yet again, this time to Syrian government. So then on December 9th, they released a video of al-Shara on July, and then Mohammed al-Bashir, the guerrilla ruler of Idlib, meeting together as if they were not enemies. Following the fall of Assad, these guerrilla thugs were ordered to start negotiating or to create the appearance of a real government. The next day, he was officially appointed by the old rebel Syrian General Command, which is a creation of the Pentagon, as, quote, prime minister of the caretaker government. But why would Syrians outside of Damascus listen to him? Just because he took the city? How many of these regional warlords want peace with Israel? If you search on Google for Syrian General Command, and you hit the Wikipedia page, it just goes to Syrian Armed Forces. Now, simply, they're termed an army, so they must be an army. Labels are important. Many countries in the world still have the HTS on their terrorist list. The sanctions have to be aimed at specific groups or persons, so a change of name or even leadership to a guerrilla group permits these to be evaded. Again, the name change in this case was from HTS to the Syrian government. But when the media, well, here's essentially what happened. Al-Sharaa, once he took Damascus, the regime sent in people. They dressed him up in a suit. You know, they had him fitted. They taught him how to stand, how to be a politician, you know. Shaved his beard a little bit. Taught him how to eat at official state dinners, you know, the utensils from the outside in. How to speak, you know, how to gesticulate, all these kind of things. And all the attention is on Al-Sharaa as head of Syria, without ever mentioning that he isn't the head of much. The only thing he keeps saying is that there is no justification for any foreign intervention in Syria's affairs, which is laughable since he was financed by foreign parties, but he's only referring to Iran. The Iranian presence was the same as external interference in his mind. Russia had become frustrated with the Assad regime, which may well be true. He even reached out to Russia to build a new relationship with that little part of Syria that he controls, whatever that might mean. But then he stated the very problem. He said, he pointed out the need to move away from the mentality of revolution and move towards a state of law and institutions. Guerrilla fighters are not government people. They're not politicians. They don't know how to create governments, especially given their foreign origin and funding. As if to make that even more plain, Al-Sharaa said to Al Jazeera that the choices of what form this government's going to take will be discussed among, quote, a group of experts. Not mentioning who they are. You know, they're imported from abroad. Then public elections. It's not never elections. But he always says public elections. Would be held to make the final choice, which is an absolute farce. So, again, the HTS is just one group of thugs among many. Following the fall of Assad in December 2024, the U.S. and Israelis rushed in to create the appearance of a government. They labeled the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham a state, an army led by the Emir Ahmad al-Sharaa, and his mosaic of new security forces were installed across at least part of Syria. Even his cabinet is foreign, made up of English-speaking academics. There's one, a Canadian woman. I forget what she does. I guarantee he never met them before. But as of a few months ago, the HCS is limited to a few areas in the north and the far south. And there's a little strip in the southwest near Israel, which of course is very important. The pro-Assad forces control an area at least as large. A continuous strip from Latakia in the far northwest, almost to Damascus itself. And that strip also borders Lebanon, which means that they could be supplied by Hezbollah, whatever possible. Then, the Kurdish SDF controls a huge region to the northeast, the center of Raqqa. In the far, far north, Turkish forces and allies control a substantial area just north of Aleppo. Finally, in the far, far southwest, bordering Israel, the IDF has taken over, of course, the Golan Heights. Keep in mind that in the south of the coastal region is a port of Tartus. Now, the guerrillas that rule in Damascus have dared not attack that bay because it's a Russian naval base, but they've even tried to offer a new lease agreement. There's no guarantee that he's going to be around. But he's told to act like a real president. Now, I've consulted many other maps that show many of these areas as quote-unquote contested. Syria, it looks like a kaleidoscope. As far as we know, this character controls the city of Damascus and a few other fairly small places around. But because he's followed around by the media, is called a president or whatever he's called. Everything he does is given an official air. He wears a suit. Initially, it was really ill-fitting. I don't know if you guys remember when he first started. But then they sent him to a fitter and they were able to take care of that. But starting on Christmas Day in a new calendar in 2024, there were demonstrations in support of Assad that were ignored. I had to go to the foreign press for this. There was large demonstrations in support of Assad. and not merely in Leucantia, which is on the coast. The armed forces of Syria, which the true armed forces of Syria, Assad's forces, ambushed the guerrillas in the Tartus countryside. The HTS responded, no doubt with American and IDF assistance, in a three-day operation. There were huge shootouts. Many Alawites were killed, many of them unnecessarily. There's no way an Alawite, which of course the Assad family was, is ever going to trust the Sunni group that has taken over, at least the city of Damascus. Al-Sharah made a symbolic visit to Leucantia as part of this national tour. They brought him around to different places, meeting with local dignitaries from various groups. And it's symbolic. What I mean by symbolic is that it suggests that because he can tour it, he has control over it. But that's far from the truth. Now, the Jerusalem Post, who should know, reported that this, quote, new administration has been reconstructing the state apparatus through widespread dismissals of officials. Of course, they're getting rid of the Baathists and, of course, the Alawites, who replaced them. HTS has no connection in that department. The Alawites are about 20% of the Syrian population. They're largely confined to the coastal areas. There's some of them in Lebanon and elsewhere. But there's been quite a bit of, and I've talked about this in the past, targeted violence against them. His PR team taught him the phrase inclusive governance, you know, a few weeks ago. But he has not met formally with any Alawite representatives. He has, however, met with Israeli allies, such as Kurds and Druze. Now, what about the elections? Nothing is more of a farce than the Syrian elections that occurred on Sunday, October 5th, just a few days ago. Here's what the UK Guardian says. I mean, completely laughable. As the battle-ravaged country moved towards its post-Assad political transition after more than a decade of civil war, members of local committees are beginning a significant milestone of selecting the transitional parliament. One-third of the assembly seats will be appointed directly by the interim leader, Ahmed al-Sharaa, in a move seen as consolidating his power. The remaining two-thirds of the seats will be seated through province-based electoral colleges, with seats distributed by population. There has been no direct popular vote, as the interim authority said the displacement of citizens and the loss of documents during the war years would make such a step impossible. During a speech at the National Library in Damascus, Sharaa said, quote, there are many pending laws, things we have to do. Things need to be voted on. So we have to move forward with the process of building and our prosperity. Building Syria is a collective mission, and all Syrians must contribute to it. You know, they dressed up a thug, and regardless of whatever else he is, that's what he is, and taught him to say this nonsense. There's a lot that I could say about that ridiculous paragraph. First, multi-party elections were held under Assad in 2021 that were observed by dozens of countries. Assad was very popular. So his two opponents, if you go back to 2021, I had a whole lecture on that. His opponents, the two other parties, tried to sound as much like him as possible. You all know, Assad never wanted power in the first place. This is a man who had a thriving practice in Britain. His brother, Basil, is killed in a car wreck. And it was his own fault. It's not like he wasn't killed and being murdered. It was his own fault. And they say, well, I guess you have to come do this. We'll get to that more in a minute. He never wanted power in the first place. Second, again, there is no government in Syria. There are numerous guerrilla groups. HTS has taken Damascus, one that the U.S. recently condemned, and with the help of Western PR firms, fitted for suits and told them all that kind of thing. They control very little of Syria. Thirdly, in no way did Ahmed al-Sharaa design that complex proportional representational system, which, by the way, is not a bad system. Who's staffing all of this, by the way? The Ba'ath Party people are disenfranchised. Of course, the Americans did, with assistance from the Israelis. Fourth, these elections are carried out under conditions of a multi-front civil war, which is continuing, where corruption reigns everywhere. Remember, under constant war, morality collapses. Of course, the results are going to be rigged. There's, you know, why wouldn't they? It's intrinsic to the system. Fifth, supporters of the former regime, whatever that might mean, are disenfranchised. That's a huge portion of the population. In other words, no party like the Ba'ath could run for office. But you might be relieved to know that the American Jew, Henry Hamra, is a candidate here for one of these elections. Hilariously, The Guardian, in the same article, The Guardian stated elections were postponed indefinitely in the Druze-majority Sweda province, areas controlled by the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, due to tensions between the local authorities and Damascus. Critics argue that the Electoral College system could favor well-connected candidates, giving the interim government an unfair advantage or excluding some ethnic and religious minorities. But for others, the election was a sign of progress. They're making it seem like he had something to do with designing this. Guerrilla thugs don't write constitutions overnight, and they don't create a very complex electoral system like this overnight. This was created by the West. Elections weren't postponed. He just doesn't control much of Syria. I don't know who these critics are. They make an obvious point about the Electoral College, but where would that body be drawn from? As if to punctuate their ignorance, they continue. Lara Yuzuki, member of the National Elections Committee in Damascus, noted that the new assembly includes all sects and groups, and that it was the first time in Syria's history the ballot box truly rules, when the results were not prearranged. Ibrahim Halabi, a former soldier under Assad's rule who defected after mass anti-government protests were met by brutal crackdowns and ensuing civil war in 2011, said, "This is the first time in our lives when we've participated in a democratic electoral process without outside pressure." To claim that that's news, it's regime propaganda. The civil war did not start due to a brutal crackdown. Assad rallies were five times the size of the opposition ones, which the media fully admitted at first. And then when the orders came down, you know, they ignored them. The opposition, of course, was controlled by USAID, Mossad, whatever. These people were given a script in these interviews. Elections under Assad were far more legitimate than this SNL skit. As of October 2025, Syria does not have a government that controls even the majority of its territory, or government at all. Now, to refresh your memory, Assad was a genuinely popular ruler, elected in 2021 in a fair election. Here's what I wrote back then, actually it was May of 2021. "The large support for President Assad is based on a desire for a return to stability and peace, a situation well known before the war, where Syria was very close to first world status. Prior to the war, Syria's economy was doing very well, which was part of the reason the West needed to destroy it. Supporters of President Assad don't blame him for the conflict, so there's no reason to. Their vote is partly based on the knowledge that the U.S.-NATO war on Syria is to destroy its economy and to protect Israel." Now, the turnout for Assad was humongous. They're not releasing turnout numbers, or at least not that I've seen yet, from Sunday. Total turnout, including parts of the diaspora, were just over 18 million voters. Bashar Assad received 95.1%. Now, if the election were rigged, he wouldn't have chosen such a high number. He's a social nationalist leader. He's very popular. Why would he even worry about that? Remember, as an ophthalmologist in Britain, he is thrust into this life He wasn't just, you know, thrust into it, you know, with no training. He was trained for 7 years in the nature of political power, military affairs, and diplomacy. Now, I don't use these terms lightly. His father's coup of 1970 was called the Corrective Revolution, where Assad promised to sustain and improve the National Socialist idea of the state and the Ba'ath Party. And that was especially aimed at the bourgeoisie that sought to use their financial success to gain offices of state. Back then, the AP said that no independent monitors watched polling stations on election day. Well, Johnson's law stipulates that such an easily refutable claim comes either from malice or ignorance. There weren't a whole lot of people who really could refute it, but I found the truth. The reality is that monitoring groups were present from Russia, China, India, Brazil, South Africa, Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, Bolivia, Ecuador, Armenia, and much of Central Asia. Of course, no one showed up from the Western states, so they had no idea whether it was fair or not. Now, Sana, the main Syrian media outlet, was more than fair to Assad's opponents. Far more than the American media was to Donald Trump's in 2016. They were given ample time to promote their agenda. But their agenda was to be as close to Assad as possible. The election monitors reported the election was open, free, and fair, and that was agreed to by the opposing candidates. There were a few minor errors. Otherwise, the election was held with no violations of international rules. Of course, under the circumstances, Assad was unassailable, and there were good reasons for it. Now, let's go back to the topic. The Syrian armed forces, Assad's army that remains, very wisely sees those who have taken Damascus as a foreign sect. Tafriki, they call it. The Syrian resistance, former SAA, or Syrian Arab Army soldiers, they've already been fighting. They issued his first statement, December 29th, 2024. I'm going to quote it. Now, I have to tell you something. The English version was so bad, and I don't read Arabic, I had to clean it up a little bit. It took a little while. I did not impose myself on the text at all, but the meaning was clear. It was just put very, very oddly. The SAA said, "After nearly 3 weeks of armed gangs taking power in Damascus with the approval and blessing of America, the Zionist occupation state, and NATO, we have seen since day one the malicious acts they've committed. Theft, violations, riots, corruption, chaos, sabotage, the destruction of Syrian property. We've also seen the Hollywood films they've made on the Saydania prison to gain public opinion and support, mocking the naive minds who believe this nonsense. They were assisted by media hype from Zionist channels, especially those from the Gulf states, forgetting the prisons of the Zionist occupation and the war of extermination on Gaza. We knew from day one that the future of Syria after December 8th would be dark for its people. We said that the day of the Wahhabi swords on our necks had come. Some believed us at the time. Others continued to dance in the delight of the imaginary freedom to the tunes of the Israeli bombing. It didn't stop for night after night, coinciding with an Israeli incursion, violation of the land and sovereignty of the state. This was completely disregarded by the administration and took over the reins of power, until the so-called Maher Marwan, who is the present governor of Damascus after Assad's ouster, made statements just a few days ago, back in December, justifying the reason for the Israeli bombing. The new administration claims it does not have any problems with Israel, that it is prostrate and open to peace. They say that Netanyahu's problem was only with Iran and Hezbollah in Syria. Now they've removed those problems. They are ready to fully implement and receive orders from Tel Aviv. Indeed, the Zionist Wahhabi project began killing the Syrian nation in the streets, homes, farms. The bullets of this new administration, a government, so-called, of terrorist gangs, unjustly and aggressively, without any legitimate religious or legal justification. The decision to shed human blood is made by asking a question or by looking at an identity card. Residential areas are starved and placed under siege. And all of this is done under the pretext of pursuing the remnants of the old regime. What kind of remnants are these, and what false pretext makes you bomb homes over the heads of their inhabitants? There's nothing strange about this, though, because whoever thought of it, Still, the same Jewish ISIS would do whatever the Israeli army does in Palestine, where it bombs a building crowded with civilians, kills hundreds of martyrs on the pretext of pursuing a resistance. Following the above, we, the group from Damascus, the coast, and other cities, we confirm the following. We will begin targeting the armed gangs affiliated with the new administration and committing massacres against our people. Our Syrian popular resistance has many surprises in store for them. Our youth are capable of reaching you in the middle of Damascus. We call on all concerned parties inside and outside Syria to force the terrorist administration represented by Ahmad al-Sharaa to stop its criminal operations against the Syrian nation so that a bloodbath does not occur, which is now just around the corner. The escalation of their terrorism and criminality. We're still waiting for the bloodshed to stop, so it is not said that we are instigators of sedition. They are. We only want Syria to be Arab, nationalist, and independent, as it was before for all parts of Syria, before the events of December 8th. Now, that was the announcement that large segments of the Syrian Arab army were present in Syria and were not going anywhere. It clearly remains a major threat to the gang that runs Damascus. And I use those words very carefully. Gang, terrorist cell, whatever. That's really what they are. They spent a lot of your taxpayer money trying to root them out on the coast. There's another group that's more recent. The Rial Anur. It's a Baathist resistance group tied to the army. Founded on August 1st of this year, 2025. In a statement commemorating Bashar al-Assad's Syrian Arab Army Day. The group released a video on September 1st, so just a month ago, that shows the group carrying out an IED attack on Jebla against a vehicle belonging to the so-called Ministry of Defense on August 15th. Earlier than that, on August 15th, five soldiers participated in addition to declaring retaliation for the arrest of Sheikh Saleh al-Mansur. So there are two separate attacks they're talking about. Now, the group name means Men of Light, are pledged to launch intensive military operations against al-Sharaa and his foreign mercenaries backed by Qatar, the U.S., and Turkey. Their focus now is on guerrilla warfare and limited ambushes, for now. The group first appeared in August of 2025, as I mentioned. It's an extension of the Coastal Shield Brigade. The initial purpose was to protect the Alawite community, which is hated by the so-called Syrian interim government. The massacres occurred in March of 2025. But it went far beyond that. This is the Syrian Arab Army. This is the nationalist force, the Baathist force. While Bashar won't be coming back, that doesn't mean the movement is dead. August 14th, 2025, it bombed an ATS vehicle on the Latakia Road. They're using small groups, what kind of video documentation. They described it as targeting al-Nusra and ISIS members of al-Juliani, a reference to the forces of Ahmad al-Sharaa, who formerly was known as Abu Ahmad al-Juliani. They carry out ambushes and attacks on security vehicles, which means, you know, the HDS. And they're focused regionally, depending on where they move to. And then melting back into the countryside again. And if they kill somebody, they take revenge action against it. They pledge to launch intensive military operations against al-Sharaa. And they also claim that the foreign mercenaries, largely, that he is dependent upon are backed by Qatar and Turkey, of course, the U.S. and Israel. The Western press didn't talk about this. It's laughable when these thugs start calling themselves, like, you know, the Ministries of Interior and Defense. It's just, you know, HDS and al-Nusra. They launched their own, you know, security campaign in Western Syria. After two HDS were killed in Damascus. They said that we could reach you anywhere. Special forces are usually your most fanatical patriots, and that's a huge chunk of what's been left behind. There's a lot they can do. And it's funny that the HDS then calls them outlaws, which is what the HDS was just a few months ago. HDS forces allegedly raided a farm used by the group as a base, as well as a medical facility used to treat its members, although I don't know why a medical facility would need to be raided. Because their men are far better trained than the so-called Tyrian government, it's easy to push them back and spook them. However, the claim was that this group was neutralized, at least for a time, and then seizure of ammunition and all the rest. They claim to have arrested a few people, some important people, and they, for example, Brigadier General Abdul Ahmad, claiming that he's a war criminal. That's all they do. They just say anyone who, and this is why, you know, signing their stupid statement is the end of you. Because anyone who fought for Assad is inherently a war criminal in their mentality. And don't forget, you also have the 10,000 men of the Ashab al-Haq and several other Iraqi units sent to fight for the restoration of the Ba'ath Party, among many other foreign factions from Iraq, and even parts of Lebanon. The point is that Syria is not dead. It's just occupied. Turkey, the U.S., the two biggest NATO militaries, plus the Israelis, the Al-Qaeda, and Daesh, they occupy, as I said, maybe at best a third of the country. It's less than that. The HDS has absolutely no democratic mandate, nor can it have. Just scrambling to rebrand themselves. And actually, STS, even right now, is still listed by the UN as a banned terrorist organization. Many Syrians, in fact, are reinventing themselves as to survive, to find a role if they're too weak, to go to the forest. The fighting against Assad's old forces is severe enough where you have, at least according to the UN, another million people who've been newly displaced. A million people. That implies a huge operation. In the face of the Al-Qaeda U.S. takeover, there's a revival of Syrian nationalism, a phenomenon neither reported nor understood by Anglo-American media or many other people. So we have to go. You have someone like me who knows where to go to answer the questions, the crimes of their Al-Qaeda regime, the fake and exaggerated propaganda against the fallen Assad regime used to justify their foreign occupation, and of course, the Syrian Arab Army and their growing military resistance to the occupation. That means the Syrian nation is still alive. Now, I don't blame Bashar al-Assad for leaving. The Iranians and Russians were upset with him. I can't envisage his personal return. He was completely exhausted, and don't forget his wife has breast cancer. She went into the remission, and then now she has acute myeloid leukemia, given a 50-50 shot at surviving, which is nasty because it goes right for the bone marrow, which produces the white blood cells, and that means, I think, last I've heard, if my source is correct, she's in a clean room. I don't blame him. That doesn't mean the social nationalist Ba'ath idea is gone. It isn't. He didn't want the job in the first place. He surrendered in order to prevent more bloodshed in Syria, but unfortunately left a vacuum, and the foreign occupation moved in. That doesn't mean the Syrian Arab Army went anywhere. It didn't. We know what happened. The sanctions, constant Israeli, Turkish, and American attacks on its forces, nonstop propaganda, and the society forced it to collapse. There was no money to pay soldiers. There was no power production anymore. The bureaucracy collapsed. The Syrian Arab Army was acting as a guerrilla force just to survive at that time. But Assad had enough. With a critically ill wife, an office he never wanted, he was broken and exhausted. Stop criticizing him. Now, once Assad was gone, the media went into action. They have to act like this is a big, he owns the whole country, and they all support him and they love him, despite him being pro-Israel. Despite the hundreds of sectarian murders, if not more, across Syria right away. As I reported back in December, January, February, March. Jalani or Alice, whatever his name is, and his henchmen, they were turned overnight into statesmen. But the HTS, that's not changed. Back in 2011, they said, Christians to Beirut, Alawites to the grave. In December 2024, the same group said, Homs is for Sunnis, Alawites must get out. These are the words of thugs. They don't have the capacity to create government. It has to be imposed from the outside. I hear pompous newscasters who still don't know that Jalani and Sharrar are the same guy. They get the names mixed up. The men of the Syrian Arab Army. And it's hard to figure the strength, the units. We know that the 25th Division, the Tiger Division is there, in the coastal mountains. They remain, they hit something and then they go back. The demonstrations against the Israeli regime there continues. Homs, Aleppo, especially by Christians, and in Tartus because they have Russian protection there. In Tartus especially, which is one of the strongholds, they pledge loyalty to Assad with our souls and our blood is the slogan there. And all religious groups there chanted this because they had the freedom to do so. The HTS attacks, they were called Syrian troops, just another militia. We're seen moving to the coastal cities. Jalani then starts to say, or al-Sharrar, I should use him, but his new name. I forget how many times. He's changed his name many times. Al-Sharrar has suggested that these foreign fighters might be given Syrian citizenship. There are tens of thousands of foreign extremists in Syria, largely from Chechnya, Uyghurs in western China, Uzbeks, Afghans, Albanians, Bosnians, whatever. They have no right to be in Syria at all. So because this man has no support in Syria, that he can't, given what he said already about the Israelis, he has these foreigners that now he wants to naturalize, and that will be his base of support and his military force. We remember what happened. Make-believe massacres were used to impose an economic blockade on Syria in 2012. The ridiculous chemical weapons claims from 2013 to 2018 were absurd. If you remember, I spoke on that. The weapons were crude, wouldn't be used by a regular army, and Assad was winning at the time. If you remember the notorious case of Cesar, a so-called worker from a Damascus morgue who defected to Qatar in 2014, all he had was a few photos of dead bodies. And he claimed that these bodies were in the morgue, there were opposition prisoners of war, tortured to death. But even Human Rights Watch, which is a font of false propaganda against Syria, were forced to admit that these pictures were of soldiers or civilians killed in attacks, just normal casualties. The invented atrocities are nothing compared to the actual documented atrocities of the Western-backed ISIS and HTS. Still, it's terrorist by many countries, including at the UN. Washington. What Washington wants in Syria, essentially, is the destruction of the independent, as many have written, the independent will which allowed it to ally with Iran and support the Palestinians and the Lebanese resistance against Israel. The point is to destroy this national will, in other words, the national focus, and to impoverish any nation that threatens Israel. Now, there were many plans to partition Syria, which seems to be the case now, going back to the French colonial regime even. These plans usually had an Alawite entity of some kind, a Druze protectorate in the south, Kurdish region. But the Turks still want parts of northern Syria, and they're going to eliminate Kurdish resistance. Beyond this, the Israelis have already annexed the Golan Heights to the south, although they're very overstretched, as we all know. The HDS is in favor of all of this. What the regime is going for right now is in line with the Security Council Resolution 2254, which was passed in 2015, which in and of itself doesn't mean anything. Who cares what the UN says? Or the ICC, or international law. But it is useful just to, when talking to people, you know, as rhetoric. Demands the maintenance of the territorial integrity of Syria, the credible, inclusive, and non-sectarian governance. A new constitution followed by free and fair elections. Well, you had that under Assad, for the most part. Certainly better elections than you had on Sunday. And keep in mind, too, information in and from the country is still controlled by the Syrian Emergency Task Force. That's a big Western corporate NGO, the White Helmets, and the cringy hand-in-hand for Syria. These were and are the foreign NGOs, the corporate NGOs that funnel money into Syria and then spread propaganda out of it. As of now, the HTS is not the Syrian government. It doesn't control Syria and is incapable of being a government of anything. The Israelis have already destroyed most of the country's defense infrastructure, proving that the Damascus guerrillas really can't do much of anything. But, as we've seen elsewhere, even against great odds, where there is resistance, the nation can still survive. Iran believes that the axis of resistance, the key support for Palestine and Lebanon, will always maintain a strategic and moral high ground against the Israelis, and can adapt to the fall of Damascus. They also say, however, and I'm speaking specifically of Republican Guard Commander Mohsen Riazi, Major General, the Syrian resistance will also rise rapidly. He says in less than a year, Syrians will revive the resistance in their country in a different way and neutralize the evil and deceitful plan of the U.S. and the Zionist regime and their collaborators. What he's referring to there, the remnants of the Syrian Arab army and those who are there now training, possibly even in parts of Lebanon, justifying bombing of your own country, justifying the Israel, saying, I don't have a problem with Israel, saying this all the time. This makes him very unpopular. This makes that so-called government very unpopular. I don't care what the media says. Nothing that the media says, given these organizations, the NGOs, can't be trusted anyway. There's hope. Other groups organizing in unison. Every time I turn around, there's a new Syrian Arab Army, a unit that comes out of the forest. No one's talking about it. The Israelis are, remember, they're very overstretched. The HTS has made themselves unpopular. They're also overstretched. Abu Mahabaz Jalani, or whatever Washington favors, whatever his name is, the self-proclaimed president of less than a third of the country. The Islamic Resistance Front in Syria is another one. Say that this already is staging strikes against the Israeli troops in the far south, and hence is at war with the government in Damascus, so-called government in Damascus. The operation served to mark the start of the retaliation against the Israeli enemy alongside our operations against the terrorist gangs of Julani, the same group of people in the HDS who are called the, quote, Syrian government. That development verifies predictions that have been made by myself, but by me. Resistance figures concerning the imminent emergence of resistance fighters all over Syria, not just on the coast. Al-Shara stated, it was actually in December, right after he took over in Damascus, that he did not seek any conflict with Tel Aviv. Of course, we knew that already. He pretended to be the Syrian president, and he said in early 2025 form this, quote, legislative body, as if they know how to do that, these foreign mercenaries. Remember, this is also a guy who was a Daesh commander in Iraq's Nineveh and Mosul provinces. This is typical of these guys. They go from place to like a circuit. They change their name. They change the name of their organizations. He was handpicked by ISIS former Abu Baghdadi in 2012 to establish the Syrian affiliate in the beginning of the Syrian war. In fact, the Western created ISIS force came into existence to fight, at the time, the advanced large Syrian army, which it did to a standstill. Out of nowhere, only a huge amount of foreign investment can do that. It's hard now to keep track of all the different military groups connected with the SAA. I don't really know what happens to people, the men who sign their reconciliation. I don't think it's very good. This isn't a regular government. It's not a government, of course. They were shooting at each other just a few months ago. And now because they signed a piece of paper? Now, allegedly, Damascus has made a deal with the Kurdish SDF. Now, they control a huge chunk of Syria, totally independent of the so-called government. They are not going to, they're going to do nothing but fight. There have always been enemies, and they continue will be. That was back in March. They signed a so-called breakthrough agreement with each other. And to integrate that region or that group into the new state under the HTS. Well, there is no new state. There was no one to implement its terms. So by September, well, just last month, a drone attack by HTS forces killed 8 civilians in Kurdish territory, which meant that the SDF reinforced its positions in the area. Now there's a war up there. So if you hear anything about any agreement or all of the, there's a postponement of the elections up there, it's laughable. HTS does have a commando unit, a special forces unit that's trained, I think, in Washington, or by Washington, has been sent to infiltrate the Kurdish region, and apparently it didn't do very well. Again, the Alawites are in the biggest problem. They were defenders, fanatical defenders of Assad. Those who remained behind were the special forces in the Syrian army, Republican Guard, the 4th Armored Division, the 25th Special Mission Forces Division, so-called Tiger Forces. The only reason that the SDF and the so-called government in Syria would ever agree is to fight them. But it's a mistake to think it's just in the Western regions, just in the coast. The Syrian Popular Resistance is a group that's developed in the east as well, aided by the Iranians via Iraq. They have a tremendous cryptocurrency fundraising program. It's a pro-Baathist, pro-Syrian government group that initially got its start by opposing U.S. Occupation forces in the area, of course. No one in Syria supports the U.S. occupying any part of Syria. So how tough could recruitment be? The Popular Resistance of the Eastern Region officially announced its existence on February 26th. It goes back to 2018. Now it's been revived, now since Assad's been gone. It's a pro-Assad movement, of course. They released some videos. The group was trained by Iranian forces, supported by Iran. It's hard to demonstrate that, but they've been engaging in guerrilla attacks against logistical convoys of the American-Israeli coalition, their affiliated forces, whether it be the SDF or the group that runs Damascus. Not to mention, they've also carried out attacks on the U.S. and eastern Syria. This is why the Pentagon has said it will not reduce the number of men deployed in Syria. because Assad's army hasn't gone anywhere. Partially because the so-called government doesn't control much territory. The HTS attack on the Druze and Suadia reportedly left over 3,000 dead. These were apparently the main factors that pushed the American military towards that decision. Then, President Erdogan said on October 1st in Turkey that his country will not allow Syria's fragmentation to spill over into Turkey. And he has no faith in the so-called HTS-SDF agreement. By the way, that agreement is the government. Without it, there is no, you know, that would be a majority of Syria. But in no way could that stand, not so long as Turkey is there. Let me conclude this. There's always hope. The recent formation of the Military Council for the Liberation of Syria by patriotic Syrian military officers who have been in hiding this whole time, whether it be Gaith Suleymandala, Suhail Hassan, as well as the Coastal Defense Brigades, that's just the beginning. Their call for a formation of a patriotic united front of Syrians from across all different lines in order to combat what clearly is a Mossad-supported government, so-called government in Damascus, which Ahmed al-Sharaa really has nothing to do with. It's got to be. Bora has to do something on this. It's really a dark comedy, like dressing up these guys and showing them how to sit and how to talk, you know, like politicians. That's really what they were doing. What they've done. Calling them a president, calling it a government, calling it a diplomatic mission, calling it an army, security forces, where they're nothing more than guerrilla thugs who have been fighting this civil war for some time under many names. And the media hasn't gotten around to realizing that al-Sharaa was a Daesh commander for some time. And he's changed his name 100 times. Syria still, I know the odds are very long, I know. But Syria may have a chance for the Ba'ath Party, the Social Nationalist Party, to retake chunks of territory that possibly the regime in Damascus will start to fall apart, if it hasn't already. And that huge victory for the Israelis, for the U.S., will be reversed, at least in part. The Western media will not report on this. No one seems to know anything about it. Researching this took me quite a while. But I mentioned it once a few months ago, or maybe even less than that. And now I'm giving you the update now. There is hope. There's always hope. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.